SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two of the Morning After, live right here on this Thursday on Sports Grid and Sirius XM Channel 159. That is the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM, all across the Sports Grid Network as well. I am Ben Stevens. This smile on my face is generally always here on the Morning After, but it grows a little bit larger today because the Sweet 16 starts tonight. The NCAA tournament is back in our lives after three long days on the men's side, two very long days for the women's big dance as well. We'll look at the women's tournament entering the round of 16 tomorrow night as well, and we'll continue our deep dive through the madness in the NCAA tournament bracket later on here in hour number two. John Rothstein, a man that knows this is March, the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, set to join us later on in hour two. Major League Baseball starts exactly 1 week from today. Jack McMullen, a man that was in Miami for the World Baseball Classic, quarters, semis, and that championship game, a dandy between Japan and the U.S., will tell us, can we carry over that electricity and enthusiasm from the WBC into a new year in MLB? But again, we start in the women's NCAA tournament here in 2023. We have seen historic madness here in March in the women's big dance. For the first time since 1998, the field expanded to 64 in the women's NCAA tournament back in 1994. So for the first time since 1998, two number one seeds have failed to reach the second weekend. That was Stanford getting knocked off by Ole Miss in the round of 32 on Sunday evening. And then on Monday night, Indiana goes down against Miami inside Assembly Hall in Bloomington. One number one seed that did not lose in the round of 32 and will appear in the Sweet 16, who is looking to go back to back as a national champion, that would be the South Carolina Gamecocks. They have now won 40 consecutive games dating back to last year's run through the big dance, a perfect 34-0 season this time around. Each of their first two victories in the NCAA tournament have come by at least 30 points. However, I will make this note. That number you see right now on Aaliyah Boston, on Dawn Staley, and South Carolina is minus 200. Yes, they are an odds-on favorite, but it was minus 240 entering the weekend of the round of 32. Maybe the cream rises to the top, but just something to keep in mind as South Carolina continues their quest to go back-to-back. But let's highlight some of the challengers for the Gamecocks as well. UConn is now in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA Women's Tournament for the 29th consecutive year. The Huskies and Gino Auriemma have made it to the Final Four 14 consecutive big dances. They now have the second-best price to win a national championship of the 16 teams remaining at 5-1. LSU has Angel Reese. They know South Carolina, having played them in the SEC regular season, despite the fact the Gamecocks won by 24 points. It's a plus 750 number on the Bayou Bengals. Caitlin Clark in Iowa, a 12-1 price. And another team from the Big Ten Conference, Maryland, is at 20-1. So as you look at South Carolina right now, they are such a dominant force in women's college hoops. It's not just an odds-on price for South Carolina to win a national championship. It is truly South Carolina versus the field. Minus 200 for the Gamecocks, plus 150 for the other 15 remaining teams. We welcome in our Sports Grid radio audience here, live to hour number two of the Morning After on this Thursday. Sirius XM Channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold as well. I am Ben Stevens. South Carolina, in their Sweet 16 game, draws UCLA out of the Pac-12. The Gamecocks are a 16.5-point favorite against the Bruins. It is the only double-digit spread in all of the round of 16 in the NCAA women's bracket. So, like we did for the men's side early on, looking at those teams that are favored to reach the Final Four, let's paint the path. South Carolina is minus 200 to win their second consecutive national championship. The Gamecocks are minus 550 to reach the Final Four. The path is certainly there for Dawn Staley and her team. UConn, the second best price, minus 165 to get to their 15th consecutive Final Four. Caitlin Clark leading the Hawkeyes at a minus 140 price. Iowa in the portion of the bracket where Stanford was upset as that number one seed. LSU minus 135. When you look of teams that are not an odds-on favorite, Louisville has the fifth best price, but the best number in plus money, it is plus 310. Louisville is led by Haley Van Lith. She has scored 26 points and 21 points respectively in the first two games for the Cards. Maddie Segrist and Villanova have the second shortest plus money price at plus 330. Maddie Segrist has scored 66 combined points so far in the Big Dance. How about a staple of women's college basketball? That would be Tennessee. Now, the Volunteers take on the other one of the two remaining one seeds that are here still in the Sweet 16, South Carolina and Virginia Tech. But Tennessee is in a pick'em game against the Hokies. We have seen at least two number one seeds make the Final Four in the NCAA Women's Tournament in 34 of the 40 years of the Women's Big Dance. That is 85%. But this year, there has been chaos, especially on the one line. NFL news and notes up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to The Morning After, live right here on this Thursday on Sports Grid and Sirius XM Channel 159. That is the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM, all across the Sports Grid Network as well. I am Ben Stevens. It is the Thursday of the Sweet 16. The day the round of 16 tips off at the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament here in 2023. We'll continue our previews in just a little bit. But it now has been 8 days, officially, of the 2023 league year in the National Football League. A lot of the notable free agents are already off the board. But that does not mean the offseason drama has come to a close all around the league. In fact, for two very notable quarterbacks, nothing really has happened as of yet. Again, starting last Wednesday afternoon, when the league year officially began, Lamar Jackson could start contract conversations, if he felt fit, with the other 31 NFL organizations after the Baltimore Ravens placed the non-exclusive franchise tag on Jackson for the 2023 season. Then, under the non-exclusive franchise tag, of course, Lamar could have conversations with other teams. If he was offered a new contract, the Baltimore Ravens would be able to match if they declined to do so. That team that wanted to sign Lamar could then send two first-round picks in exchange for Lamar's services to Baltimore. Well, this process hasn't really played out yet. In fact, the most news we've seen around Lamar Jackson in the last 2.5 weeks was right after that non-exclusive franchise tag was placed on Lamar. Multiple teams around the National Football League that we all anticipated needed a quarterback, or at least had a question to answer around their quarterback spot this offseason, came out and adamantly said, hey, we're not interested in the Lamar Jackson sweepstakes. It's been a very interesting dichotomy between Jackson and the Ravens front office, really over the past 2.5 years in the National Football League, because there hasn't been a contract extension offered to Lamar Jackson. He has played his first 5 years in the National Football League under his rookie deal with the Ravens organization. No contract extension has truly been agreed upon between Lamar and the Ravens brass. And maybe because of that, there are reports out there in National Football League circles that Lamar Jackson is all too thrilled with the Ravens front office. And frankly, at this point, who could blame him? So when those reports are out there, it is now the idea that is Lamar's time in Baltimore ultimately coming to a close? We'll see what happens. Again, there's a lot that goes into this situation around Lamar Jackson this offseason. For instance, if you are going to offer Lamar a new deal, apparently the holdup between Lamar and the Ravens brass has been the amount of guaranteed money that Lamar Jackson desires and, frankly, in my estimation, is worth. You see Lamar Jackson's stats from 2023. Sorry, having some nose issues here in the studio. You see those stats, if we could pull them up once again so I don't have to be on camera at the moment. You see Lamar Jackson's stats from 2022, and he only played 12 games. He has only played 12 games each of the last two seasons. But let's not forget who Lamar Jackson is. A historic, record-setting quarterback that back in the 2019 campaign won an NFL MVP as he ran for more than 1,200 yards, still a single-season record in the history of the National Football League for anybody playing the quarterback position. It would not be often that you would see a 26-year-old former MVP hit the open market and not have teams clamoring for his services, the slightly open market, because again, there is the complicating factor that not only do you have to pay Lamar Jackson a ton of money, which he is deserving of in this new contract, you would have to send two first-round picks back to the Ravens if the flock said, hey, we're good. We declined to match that offer sheet. So a ton goes into this entire situation. Ultimately, we'll see what happens with Lamar Jackson this offseason and the Ravens. I will note, though, oftentimes we allow the odds to lead the conversation here on the morning after. The Ravens still are 200 to win the AFC North Division. The Ravens are still 13-1 to win the AFC. That price at plus 1,300 to win the conference is tied for the fifth best in the National Football League on that side of the league. 2-1 to win the AFC North is the second best price, only 65 cents behind Cincinnati, and the Bengals have won the divisional crown for two consecutive years. Both of those prices, in my estimation, to win the division and the conference championship overall include a Lamar Jackson at quarterback for Baltimore. How about Aaron Rodgers? Well, we haven't really heard much since Aaron announced on the Pat McAfee show just 8 days ago, last Wednesday afternoon, that it was his intention to play for the New York Jets in 2023. But we haven't seen any deal done as of yet for the Green Bay Packers and the New York Jets, as Aaron Rodgers needs to be acquired. As we keep it rolling here and we look at what a potential holdup could be for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers and the New York Jets. There has been this conversation now around Aaron Rodgers making his way to New York. That really, who holds the leverage? Is it the Green Bay Packers that are sending a four-time NFL MVP to the New York Jets? Or is it the New York Jets? Because as Aaron has said, and as the league has pretty much dictated as well, it's either the Jets or retirement for Aaron Rodgers. The Packers have already made their plan for the future. That is Jordan Love entering his fourth year in the National Football League. It is not a plan for the future that is all that foreign to Aaron Rodgers or the Green Bay Packers, because Aaron Rodgers has spent 18 years in Green Bay. He is the longest tenured Packer in the history of that very historic franchise. When you look then at the Packers and what their plan is moving forward, when Brett Favre left the organization after 16 years as the starting quarterback, when we looked at that for Brett Favre back in the day, it was Aaron Rodgers that then became the starter entering his fourth year in the National Football League. This is a plan the Packers have used with their 35 years virtually of two quarterbacks, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. So their plan is to move forward. So what is the holdup for the deal? Are the Packers asking for too much in return? Russell Wilson last year, when he was traded from the Seattle Seahawks to the Denver Broncos, got two first-round picks sent back to Denver. There was to Seattle. There was a couple more draft picks in there as well, four first- and second-round draft picks over a two-year span. When Deshaun Watson was traded from the Houston Texans to the Cleveland Browns, three first-round picks 6 total draft selections were sent back to the Texans. Aaron Rodgers is about to enter his 19th year in the National Football League. Aaron Rodgers is at the tender age of 39 years old. Aaron Rodgers is not going to be worth that much draft capital, but we still wait for an official deal to be done. Speaking of Russell Wilson had arthroscopic knee surgery earlier this week. He is already back throwing and working out for the Denver Broncos. Will we see a return to the Russell Wilson of old here in 2023 after a career worst year in his first year in the Mile High City? Let's look at the Denver Broncos odds now in terms of what they have to win the AFC West, the AFC, and the Super Bowl. If you remember their odds to win the division entering 2022, it was a plus 260 number. Now it's plus 460. What is the ceiling for the Broncos this year? 25-1 to win the AFC, 35-1 to be a true contender to win Super Bowl 58. It is a big week of pro days for quarterback prospects in the 2023 NFL Draft. C.J. Stroud had his pro day yesterday in Columbus, Ohio. Today in Tuscaloosa, it's Bryce Young. And Friday in Lexington, it is Will Levis. C.J. Stroud right now remains the favorite to go number one overall. All right, I need to blow my nose. Take us to break. We'll see you up next here on The Morning After.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Exactly 1 week from today, a new season in Major League Baseball begins. Hope springs eternal once again to start 2023 in MLB. But baseball has been here over the past 2.5-3 weeks. With all of the excitement, the enthusiasm, and the specter that has been the World Baseball Classic, one of our good friends joins us here on a Thursday live on The Morning After. On Tuesday, we had Peter Apple from Just Baseball. Baseball Classic Championship game between Team Japan and Team USA. He was there in Miami with all of our good buds from Just Baseball Media, including one Jack McMullen. And Jack joins us here on this Thursday on The Morning After. Jack, you were there with Peter, with Aram, with the entire gang for the quarterfinal round, the semifinal round, and for one of the best championship games we could have ever hoped for between Japan and the U.S. in Miami on Tuesday evening. Thank you for taking the time to join us here on The Morning After on this Thursday.
Absolutely, man. I'm still reeling. You know, I didn't think it was possible for me anymore to sleep 12 hours, but I did sleep 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. I was like totally hitting empty on my battery, but I wouldn't have it any other way. That was absolutely perfect.
So, Jack, in Miami, on Tuesday night, it was a game that we all hoped for to cap off a tournament where many of us said, it's the best baseball game I've ever seen on a consistent basis. And then it might have been the best baseball game with the best ending we could have ever scripted, because on the mound for Japan, it was Shohei Ohtani. At the dish for the Americans, it was Mike Trout. Two teammates with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim facing off with a world championship on the line. Jack, a 3-2 count. In the bottom of the ninth, two outs for the U.S. And Shohei Ohtani gets Mike Trout swinging for a strikeout to crown Japan a world champ once again at the WBC for the third time in the five playings of this event. You were there live and in person in Miami to witness it all on Tuesday night for the championship game in the World Baseball Classic. Jack, how do you describe the atmosphere? How do you describe the ending of that championship game?
Well, I moonlight as a play-by-play announcer, and you just kind of stole my thunder there. Like, that was a perfect setup, and that was a perfect description. So, no, I mean, in one word, electric. And I told you right before we hopped on live on air, I'm not typically the person to get corny or over-sentimental about sports, but there is a certain moment in your life, regardless of your favorite sport, where you can't help but crack a smile. Like, you almost notice physically, it's like, oh, my cheeks are tight. I think for me, the last moment to make me do that was Mark Burley's perfect game, growing up a White Sox fan. That's 15 years ago. Then in that Mexico-Japan semifinal, when Randy Arozarena robs that home run and mean mugs into the camera on the left field warning track, that same sensation came back. And then Munetaka Murakami, that 111-mile-an-hour two-run double to walk it off in the semi to send Japan to the final, that sensation happened again. And then to see Shohei Ohtani come out of the left field bullpen, walk all the way in, and go, I mean, like, that at bat against Trout, I could not wipe the smile off my face. Like, I felt a heart rate that I hadn't felt as a fan in 15 years. That was the best baseball game I have ever been lucky enough to be in attendance for, and I've been in attendance for a lot of baseball games.
It was the perfect moment, Jack, in my estimation, to encapsulate what was a fantastic tournament and the enthusiasm for baseball entering a new Major League Baseball season. It truly was, and that is the beauty of sports, even for two people that work in sports, and oftentimes you can become slightly jaded. It's those moments of enthusiasm, of pure passion, when you are in that moment and you have a smile like you did when you were a five-year-old kid watching your favorite player win a championship. Shohei Ohtani in Japan win their third WBC title in the five playings of this event. Shohei Ohtani is an absolute unicorn. He batted 435 throughout the World Baseball Classic. He had two wins on the mound, 11 strikeouts, including the game and title clincher against Mike Trout. Jack, this was my favorite stat. Mike Trout, in over 6,170 plate appearances in his Major League Baseball career, has had an at-bat that featured three swinging strikes just about 26 times. And that's what Shohei Ohtani did to Mike Trout to give Japan the championship. Right here, right now, is Shohei Ohtani the best baseball player on planet Earth?
Unequivocally, yes. And I do want to shout out Michael Fisher of Codify, because he dives into those numbers so we don't have to. Friend of the Just Baseball show. That guy does a tremendous service for pitchers. But man, seeing that stat in hindsight and watching the way that slider bent against the best hitter on the planet, after experiencing that in person, I would say absolutely yes, Ohtani is the best player on planet Earth. I'm going to go even farther. Here's a take for you. Shohei Ohtani is the single best thing to happen to baseball, because baseball has been branded as the dying sport, right? It's getting too slow. The three true outcomes, strikeouts, walks, home runs, they are way too much. Okay, well, find somebody that does all three. He walks at the plate. That's the most boring. He hits home runs. That may be the most impressive, but then he strikes out 200 dudes a year. This guy does both at such a high level, and he is so level-headed and so encapsulating of like what everybody wants to be in Little League. You've got this hyper-specificity, right? We go into this era of pigeonholing guys. You're a pitcher at age 8. You're going to be a pitcher through your age 38 season of Major League Baseball. That's all you're going to do. You're a first baseman. You're a first baseman for the next 30 years of your baseball career. Ohtani is the best player on your Little League team. He's just doing it at the highest level. And that freedom, that ability to play loose and fun and do whatever you want on a baseball field, he is the definition of the game, because he is playing a game better than anybody else. And I think Pedro Martinez said it best to him on MLB Network postgame. He thanked him on behalf of the baseball world for being Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani, again, I think is the best thing to ever happen to baseball, because he came in at the perfect time.
It feels like it might be a big thing to say, but Jack, when you see what he does and you see what he represents for the sport overall, maybe it's not that big entirely. Here's what I'll say about Shohei Ohtani. He's a very big favorite to win the American League MVP in 2023. As we take some of that fervor from the World Baseball Classic into a new year in Major League Baseball, that again, Jack, starts exactly 1 week from today. You see the odds right there. Ohtani is plus 220, nearly $5 shorter than everybody else in the American League, including his Angels teammate in Mike Trout and last year's MVP after the historic season for Aaron Judge, 62 long balls, a single season record in the American League. So, Jack, if it's not going to be Shohei Ohtani to win the Most Valuable Player Award in the AL, what does it take from somebody else to knock Shohei off that favorite perch?
So I remember we were talking in July of this past year, and you asked a very similar question. What does Aaron Judge need to do to take the MVP away from Shohei Ohtani? And I said, he legitimately needs to be a record breaker to beat Shohei Ohtani at this game, at this MVP game. Look what Aaron Judge did. He breaks Roger Maris's American League home run record, and he wins the AL MVP. I think you need a record breaker to do this. At plus 220, Ohtani somehow feels like a smart bet, because if nobody else breaks a record, he might just win the MVP. As weird as it sounds, and the first time and probably last time you will ever say it, plus 800 for Mike Trout feels like a steal. I would think about that big time. And then the other name on that board that really intrigues me is Jose Ramirez with the Cleveland Guardians. J-Ram is one of the more electric talents in Major League Baseball. He's not looking for a breakout because he's had a breakout for a very long time. But the Guardians should be the favorite to win the American League Central. If J-Ram is a 30-homer, 30-stolen base guy and Ohtani sputters, if Trout deals with the injury bug again, I think that might be the guy to take it. But it is Ohtani's award to lose, and we got 162 games to go.
So that moment on Tuesday night with Ohtani and Trout facing off for a world championship on the line made a lot of people think, whoa, this got to be good for the Angels in 2023. Yeah. Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout have been teammates for five seasons. Four of them have been a full year, not counting the 2020 sprint that we saw that was 60 or so games. Mike Trout hasn't been fully healthy for all of them. Neither has Shohei Ohtani. But, Jack, the Angels have not made the playoffs since 2014. In those four full years with both Shohei and Mike Trout in the roster, they have only won at most 80 games. So taking that momentum from the World Baseball Classic, is this finally the year the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim will see the Major League Baseball playoffs?
No. maybe. I will say maybe. Baseball is such a weird game. You can have the two best players on the planet, and still, if there are not enough good pieces around you, you sputter and you are below 500. I think that they can possibly sneak into that last wild card spot because the rotation is a lot better than it has been in recent years. You look at Ohtani front, they just signed Tyler Anderson from the Dodgers to a three-year deal. Patrick Sandoval just looked great in the World Baseball Classic for Mexico, and Reed Detmers has taken a massive step up. Is a great postseason four. I think the Angels, if they do get in, it's a wild card spot. They're not beating the Astros.
The Astros, the odds-on favorites to win the AL West once again, the reigning World Series champs. Jack McMullen, thank you for your time on this Thursday. More the morning after.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is the second weekend of the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament in 2023. This is the Thursday, the opening night of the Sweet 16 in the 2023 Big Dance. And of course, this is March. Live right here on this Thursday, on the morning after, on Sports Grid. Sirius XM, channel 159 as well. I am Ben Stevens. We are very pleased to welcome on John Rothstein to the morning after on this opening day of the round of 16 in the NCAA tournament. John joining us from FanDuel and, of course, CBS Sports as well. John, very glad to have you here on this opening day of the Sweet 16. Where is your enthusiasm level as the Sweet 16 tips off tonight?
Really excited. I think, you know, the one thing that the Sweet 16 really obviously creates is a weeding out process. And there are a couple of schools who are obviously, you know, the dreamers that are still trying to be in a situation where they can continue their Cinderella run. Obviously, Princeton and Florida Atlantic come to mind when you think about that. And then there are the Blue Bloods, the teams that are trying to get to college basketball's most hallowed showcase, the Final Four. But in order to get to a Final Four, you first have to get to an Elite Eight. So we've got four interesting games tonight and a real special matchup later tonight in Las Vegas between UCLA and Gonzaga.
And we will get to all of the Sweet 16 action on this Thursday in just a moment. But, John, as you all know, despite the big dance still going on in the few days we had without any NCAA tournament games, we had some big news all around college basketball, including for a team that gave Texas a test in the round of 32 over this past weekend. That would be Penn State and their head coach, Micah Shrewsbury. That is no longer the head coach in State College. He's the new head man for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in South Bend. John, what was your reaction to this news that Micah Shrewsbury has now been named the new head coach of Notre Dame?
Well, you know, I reported last week that, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, that Penn State was prepared to make a large financial commitment to Micah Shrewsbury to keep him as Penn State's head coach. You know, but when I think you really look at things, you know, Micah Shrewsbury has deep roots in the state of Indiana. Micah Shrewsbury is somebody who, again, is very, very comfortable recruiting in that breadbasket. And being the head coach of Notre Dame from a basketball perspective, long-term from a branding perspective, is a better fit for Micah Shrewsbury than being the head coach of Penn State. And I also think you have to look at this from a roster perspective. I know we're in a time right now with immediate eligibility where things can change, but you look at the roster for Penn State, Jalen Pickett goes, Andrew Funk goes, Cam Winter goes. It's a good time to press the reset. Now Micah Shrewsbury will have to reset a Notre Dame program that, again, has been decimated after this season, which was not a successful one.
A very poor record in the ACC for the Irish this year. It was not the case for Penn State. 23 wins, the first tournament appearance for the Nittany Lions since 2011, the first tournament win since 2001. Micah Shrewsbury, one of the best offensive minds and an Indianapolis native, returning to his home state in South Bend for Notre Dame. John Rothstein has been breaking news all week long. He was all over Providence and Georgetown and those news that we had throughout this week. John, Ed Cooley introduced yesterday as the new head man in Washington, D.C., for Georgetown men's basketball. He had this interesting quote to say during his introductory press conference. Quote, "It is divine providence that I'm here." Now, Rothstein, there's been a ton of conversation on social media about comparing Providence to Georgetown right now. Georgetown has the history. Providence has seen much more success in the last 5 years. So, John, I ask for your opinion here. What do you think the better job is within the Big East in college basketball? Georgetown or Providence?
Georgetown is definitely the better job when you think about, obviously, the upside, the brand, the tradition, the recruiting location. But Ed Cooley was Providence basketball. Ed Cooley made Providence into a perennial contender for the NCAA tournament. And let's look at this for a second here, Ben. Providence under Ed Cooley advanced to 7 of the last 9 NCAA tournaments. Prior to that, Providence had only played in 7 of the last 27 NCAA tournaments. So I understand everything that Ed said. He wanted a change. He had an opportunity to go to Washington, D.C., where his daughter had went to Georgetown and is going to work in the district as a young professional. But Ed also tarnished his image and his legacy that he built at Providence. And I think now, when you look at this from a Big East perspective, there is no doubt that the burgeoning rivalry to watch in the Big East is going to be Providence against Georgetown. I would expect that game that Ed Cooley goes back to Rhode Island as Georgetown's head coach to be as intense, as highly anticipated, as we have seen in a long time in terms of a Big East conference game. And I think if you look at the landscape of the Big East, we obviously have a change at Providence. Georgetown has not had a very, very successful run for a number of years, aside from obviously that run in the Big East tournament during COVID. And now the school in the Big East that is upgraded the most is without question St. John's. And St. John's has not won an NCAA tournament game since 2000, but St. John's is unequivocally the winners of the coaching carousel, because St. John's has landed arguably not just the best coach in college basketball, but the best coach of this generation. And this is why I say that, Ben. I firmly believe that if Rick Pitino did not go to the Boston Celtics in 1997, Rick Pitino would be the all-time leader in wins. And Rick Pitino, had he stayed at Kentucky, would have won more national championships than anybody else in the modern era, other than obviously John Wooden did at UCLA. And now if you're looking at this, if you're St. John's, you have obviously the hire that, you know, you finally got right after, you know, years of obviously struggling to gain consistent national relevance. And I think if you're looking at this, Ben, from a New York sports perspective or just an overall sports perspective, Rick Pitino being hired this week by St. John's is comparable to when the Knicks hired Pat Riley from the Los Angeles Lakers in 1991. It's that big of a deal.
A man that knows coaching the Knicks, he is also Rick Pitino. A .740 win percentage throughout his illustrious college basketball career. The Red Storm will be his sixth job as a head coach in college hoops. John, the task for any head coach of St. John's is highlighting Madison Square Garden, where the Sweet 16 tips off tonight between Michigan State and Kansas State. The Spartans right now, a slight 1.5-point favorite for this matchup to start us off in the round of 16 within the East region. How competitive, John, do you expect this game to be between the Spartans and the Wildcats?
Really competitive, and I expect, obviously, you know, Kansas State to shine exceptionally bright under the bright lights of Madison Square Garden with Marquise Noel. It's been the best guard in this NCAA tournament, and Keontae Johnson, but I thought, and then I thought some more, and then I thought, and I thought some more, and I thought about conversations I've had with Tom Izzo over the last 10 years about how sometimes in the NCAA tournament, even if you don't have your best team, you may have your best opportunities to go on a run. And Tom Izzo has always told me that sometimes you don't get a chance to win a national championship or go to a Final Four with your best team. This isn't his best team at Michigan State, but it is a Michigan State team that to go to a Final Four would have to beat a good Kansas State team, but not a great Kansas State team. This isn't obviously a team, you know, like we saw, you know, Kentucky have in 2015 that started 38-0. And then on the other side of the bracket, you have Florida Atlantic, who's won 33 games, had a great season, and Tennessee, who is obviously moving forward without its starting point guard, Zakai Ziegler. It really has tugged at Tom Izzo the last 10 years that he has not capitalized on certain opportunities in the NCAA tournament. Now, what specifically am I referencing? In 2010, Michigan State went to the Final Four in Indianapolis, lost to Butler by 2 points in the national semifinals. Duke, on the other side, beat West Virginia and then beat Butler in the title game. Tom Izzo knew that obviously Butler was good. He knew that Duke was good, but he didn't feel like they were great vintage teams for those programs. So he knew, even though Michigan State went to that Final Four without Kalen Lucas at starting point guard, that Michigan State had a chance to win a national championship. In 2014, Michigan State, in the building they'll play in tonight, played Connecticut with Shabazz Napier and had Brandon Dawson, Gary Harris, Adrian Payne, and was the favorite by many to win the national championship and lost in the Elite Eight. Those two things tug at Tom Izzo because he had a situation where there was an attainable goal in the Final Four in 2010, and he felt like he had the best team in 2014, and it didn't wring out the sponge. Now, if you're Tom Izzo, you have an opportunity to win a couple of games at the Garden and get to the Final Four as a 7 seed, just like you did in 2015. So if I have to recalibrate my picks, I'm taking Sparty to win two more at the world's most famous arena.
Plus 270 right now for Michigan State, the second best price to win the East region. Tennessee, a 4.5-point favorite against FAU tonight, John. They are the favorites to win the East region at plus 125. I guess we'll find out tonight, John Rothstein, if this is the month of March or is it the month of Izzo for the Michigan State Spartans. Now we go out to Las Vegas, Nevada for the marquee matchup of the round of 16. The nightcap in Las Vegas. It is Gonzaga and UCLA. A rematch of the Final Four game just two NCAA tournaments ago, where in overtime, Jalen Suggs hit the half-court buzzer beater to send the Zags to the national title game. John, it's only a 1.5-point spread. It is virtually a pick'em between the Bruins and the Bulldogs tonight. How do you describe the magnitude of what we will anticipate to see in Las Vegas this evening?
the ultimate contrast in styles. Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament is averaging 83 points per game. UCLA in the NCAA tournament is surrendering only 58 points per game. UCLA, again, even without Jalen Clark, has been dynamite defensively, really, since he obviously stepped out of the lineup. But UCLA, again, in order to win this game, is going to have to keep Gonzaga's offense in check. And the more physical the game, the better it is with the Bruins. But if this thing gets over 70, I like Gonzaga to advance.
Right now, John, UCLA and UConn battling it out for that top spot, at least according to the numbers, to win the West region. Connecticut, a slight favorite, plus 185, 10 cents ahead of UCLA with a plus 195 number. John, we expected this to be the most competitive portion of the Big Dance bracket. Who is your pick right now to win the West and represent this region in the Final Four?
I took Gonzaga at the start of the NCAA tournament, so I'm not wavering from that prediction, but I would not be surprised if any of these four teams wound up making it to Houston and playing in the Final Four. Would not be surprised. Another thing, too, you know, in talking to UCLA staff last night, Ben, that I think is really important, it's obviously important to defend, but part of obviously playing great defense and keeping the pace at obviously an attainable level for UCLA to succeed is based on controlling tempo, and that's all directly correlated to Tiger Campbell. Tiger Campbell in the NCAA tournament has 17 assists to just 2 turnovers. Those are freakish tight numbers for the veteran point guard. And remember, in the Final Four 2 years ago, Tiger Campbell was the one who went toe-to-toe with Jalen Suggs. His numbers in that game, Ben, 17 points, 7 assists, 1 turnover. Tiger Campbell's a critical piece, as always, for UCLA tonight to get to an Elite Eight.
There is no better way to start off the Sweet 16 than with John Rothstein here on The Morning After. John, thanks so much for your time.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We round out our 2 hours together here live on this Thursday on The Morning After on Sports Grid. It is a Thursday of the Sweet 16 and the 2023 Men's NCAA Tournament that tips off tonight. Let me check my watch here. How much time we got? About 7.5 hours remain until the first game of this Thursday evening in the round of 16 at Madison Square Garden between K-State and Michigan State. 4 games on this Thursday. 4 games tomorrow on a Friday to determine the Elite Eight. Of course, everybody's still in the hunt for a national championship. So as we close out these 2 hours together, of course, you need a best bet. So before we say farewell and before we say goodbye, it's time for a Sweet 16 best bet. It is time for Bye Bye Bye. In the East region tonight, inside the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden hosts the nightcap between Tennessee and Florida Atlantic. Right now, the Volunteers are the favorites to win the East region. They're also a 4.5-point favorite tonight against FAU. We know what Tennessee does, and they do it supremely well. They are an incredibly aggressive and physical defense, the most efficient defense, according to KenPom, in all of college basketball. But do not sleep on FAU as some mid-major team that is on the 9 line and has made it here to the Sweet 16. That is not the case for the Owls. Florida Atlantic, led by their head coach Dusty May, is a 33-win basketball team. FAU is incredibly balanced. They have 7 to 9 guys that play a ton of deep rotational parts for FAU. So because of that, I think this Owls team is built to handle the physicality of Tennessee. I think the Owls cover tonight as a 4.5-point favorite. So much so, in fact, I jumped on this line when it was 5.5 earlier this week. Florida Atlantic to cover as a dog tonight inside MSG, the nightcap for the Sweet 16 inside the world's most famous arena. That does it for a Thursday on The Morning After. We'll be back tomorrow on a Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. I'm Ben Stevens. We'll talk then.